We're with District 11 Councilman Matt Watson. There is a major vote that will take place regarding the smoking ban. Matt, how does it look as you see it right now?
Well, thank you for having me, Jim, and I want to wish all of your listeners a happy and exciting first day of school to many of the kids that are going out there, my children included. Tonight, I think that we've come to terms, those folks who've taken the time to have meetings, those other council people I've spoken with, ones that from the get-go weren't necessarily going to be supportive of this. I've had conversations with those folks that there's ways that we could make this more of a gradual slope from the moment of vote to the moment of enforcement, and changing some definitions a little bit so that's not as harsh on those businesses, that we could get more than the 7-5 vote that was initially looked at, and we could get us all where we want to be, and that's just to limit the exposure to secondhand smoke by non-smokers who don't want to breathe that.
Okay, so when you say a gradual change, what do you mean?
Well, I know that Trey Welch has said, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, he said in emails that he wants to see 365 days out. I know that we've got folks that represent the casino industry that want to have 365 days out from the vote to enforcement. And the reason for that, as it's been explained to me and I can understand, they want to be able to go to the state legislature and vie for extending their square footage, especially at LaBerge and the boats here, so that they can mirror what's happening at Harris. That would allow them to still be able to serve those customers, have those folks in the gaming room, and partake of the services and goods they came to those businesses for, whether it be a bar or a casino. But the casinos, we're not in a situation as a municipality to grant them more gaming square footage. They've got to go to the state legislature to do that.
Okay, so based on what I'm hearing from you, there will be a move tonight to make this take place as far as enforcement on August 9th, 2018. Is that what it's looking like?
I know that you'll hear that from at least one other council person, and I know that some folks that, again, folks that said that they would not be supportive of this, that said they can understand that being the amount of time frame between vote and enforcement, that they could be brought into the fold and vote for this. I've placed in what I put out in a press release the other day is that I can't be supportive of anything shorter than June 1st, 2018. That would be very aggressive in the hands of anyone at the state legislature to probably have to pre-file and work very quickly and get the governor's attention to pass something that would allow them to have more exterior gaming, more gaming space that they would choose to be exterior so they can allow smoking at those machines.
Do you think the 7 votes are there?
I believe that we should be able to have them. I think they're there. Who knows what some of these members of the Metro Council will come in and are liable to say or do anything at the drop of a hat. I believe that in the meetings that I've had with those folks that understand that there's a practical effect on the economic landscape to a lot of these businesses, understand the permitting process and allowing bars to build an exterior space to still serve their customers. Those people with a head on their shoulders that understand how this should be written in a reasonable manner, I think we've got the votes to pass this.
All right, 877-217-5757 for Matt Watson, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Councilman District 11, and he is a relatively new councilman, but one going away in his election. And he has been at the forefront on this and has been considered a swing voter. Really, if you vote yes, it would seem the deal is done. But as you say, councilmen sometimes change and for good reason, and sometimes maybe for not good reason, but that's up for the electorate to decide. Do you think there'll be any surprises?
There could always be surprises tonight, Jim. I only have control of my own behavior, and I talking to other folks. There's other folks that were in the initial 7 that I've spoken with. Barbara has said in the Advocate article that she understands the amendments that I've worked with our parish attorney on, that she would support those amendments. Whether she would support something else, I don't know. I think she'd probably be supportive of, you know, a longer, more lax time frame. I'm not going to put those words in her mouth, but I think that we've got those people that we need to get this in a reasonable rule change passed.
All right, and I'm following you. You're saying that you want it to start June 1st of next year.
I want it to start no earlier than June 1st. If we get something out
no
there,
earlier.
If we get something out there that's got the votes to pass it in 365 days and that looks like what's going to get passed, I'll vote for that. It's that would not preclude me from voting to for a second, you know, friendly amendment on mm-hmm. the floor that moved back to June 1st. So we'll see how right. it plays out.
Now, there are those, of course, who are going to be adamant saying that's way too long and things can change and it just gives some wiggle room for those who don't want a smoking ban. How do you answer them?
For starters, I wouldn't know how the change in implementation for us really substantially changes its effect. If I've heard people say, especially from the lobbyists who have spoken with me from the anti-smoking campaign, that somehow the casinos could file something to preempt the smoking ban. They really could preempt it regardless of whether we began enforcing it or not. I understand it'd be a little more difficult, but if they've got the horses to stop this after, before we've enforced it, they've got the horses and the power to be able to preempt something even after it's mm-hmm. enforced.
This ban has already gone into effect in New Orleans, mm-hmm. in Lafayette, in Monroe, in Alexandria. Why is it such a big deal in Baton Rouge?
I'm not following you. What do you mean? Well,
it didn't pass last year. Many thought it would, and it apparently is going to be a close call tonight if it passes at all. Why is it so contentious here as opposed to those other places?
Well, you've got some folks on the Metro Council that say they just don't want to pass it. Then you've got folks that are so far to one side that want it to be highly restrictive and may not move off of their seat to vote for something that's a compromise. It's just a matter of, unfortunately, the lack of cooperation sometimes, or if we can get together on something and come to terms over something that may mm-hmm. not be perfect for everybody, but again, gets us to where we want to go, and that's the end result being to limit exposure of smoke to those people who don't want to breathe it.
All right, and a listener notes that from last year's vote, two of the six members are no longer there, right, who voted?
There are three. Joel Bowie voted for the smoking ban. Ryan Heck and John Delgado vote against.
Okay, so Heck and Delgado were the two who voted against.
Correct.
And you took
I took Heck's,
Heck's
seat.
Place,
Barbara
and
took,
Barbara took Barbara Freiberg took the other seat by John Delgado. So the two of you could make the difference if one or both of you voted to impose the ban. But what about the others? Is there any possibility some of those who voted no last year would change this year?
I don't believe that Trey, you'll have to forgive me if I'm
Trey
remembering Trey Welch, if he voted against it last time.
He has
let me know that if the ban took 365 days to implement, he could be moved to vote for this.
Okay, so it potentially could even be an 8-4 vote. Or
I'm not going to put any words in anybody else's mouth, but I had a phone conversation last night that if we get 365 days, it could be a 9-3 vote.
Okay. Now, there are going to be some other items on the agenda tonight, too, and we'll talk about those. But the I guess the danger is that this could end up taking a lot of time and a lot of energy. Do you think this is going to dominate the event this evening?
I don't know if it will. I've spoken with some of the folks that are with for the American Heart Association, and they've said that they're going to have some folks to come up and reiterate the same sentiments that they've reiterated when they first brought this before council, and then when they brought it before council a couple of months ago, because we really believe that we've said grace over some amendments that should be suitable to those parties involved.
All right. Well, Metro Councilman Matt Watson is with us for a while longer. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Before we go to the break, Matt, you have an amendment regarding the firefighters and the police officers. What exactly would your amendment do?
The amendment, which is actually brought to the discussion by Councilman Trey Welch, was to just, instead of reinventing the wheel on this, looking at the state regulations on controlling smoking in restaurants, and per state law, it merely states that any law enforcement agent would be the enforcement on that law. So instead of putting it, unfortunately, on the backs of seven independent fire departments across the parish, just putting it in the hands of law enforcement seems to make sense and really just mirroring what's already existing in state law.
Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. I'd just like to ask Mr. Watson, by the way, I have to admit it being an ex-smoker, but on the internet, there's preventable causes of death, and smoking is about the number second or number third thing, way above alcohol and other drugs. It might help Mr. Watson if he made a copy of that article and took it to the council meeting and see what the other councilmen who are against putting a ban on smoking have to say when they actually see the amount of deaths a year that it causes. I'll take my answer off the air, Jim, on here.
Okay. Thank
well,
you,
Ray, thank you so much for calling in, Ray. I understand completely you wanting to take that information to the other council members, but I can assure you that message and the data that you're talking about has been delivered numerous times to every single member of council, and every council member is making their decision on this, knowing all that information as well.
All right, 877-217-5757, and we will address other topics, but... The casinos have said, look, if you don't like it, you can go somewhere else. If you don't like working here, you can work somewhere else, that this is your choice, and that smoking and casinos kind of go together. How do you answer their point of view?
Well, I can understand that, but you look at it from a different perspective. If you had, for example, if you said that living on Starring Lane, the wider part of Starring Lane, was a dangerous place to live by, you know, some of these folks' attitudes, I could walk up and when they complained about the speed limit or something like that, I could say, you know, it's a free country. Why don't you sell your house and move?
Okay.
I mean, if that's going to be the simple, callous, cavalier solution to everything is drop what you're doing and go move somewhere else or go find another job in this job market. I mean, if that's the solution, then I guess it should be for every problem that we've got.
All right. And another listener says the casinos, at least one of them, is intent on thwarting obesity because the cocktail waitresses are weighed on a regular basis. 877-217-5757. Matt in South Baton Rouge. Matt, you're on the air with Matt Watson.
Hey, good morning. Yes, I have a question. I don't know the jurisdiction of it, but one of the interesting things I find about Baton Rouge is that our Metropolitan Airport has a smoking lounge. Is this in the purview of the city council, or is this being regulated by another entity? It's not related to casinos, I understand, but it's one of the few airports I find in the nation that still have or allow smoking in a lounge area, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for that question. I got to admit that I'll say even at this 11th hour, that's something that I hadn't thought about. Certainly, the Metro Council handles a whole lot of manages a whole lot of the activities from a legislative branch that happen on the airport ground. So this, I mean, it would be a bar. It would be inside the jurisdiction of the parish. I will, as an aside, this doesn't have any effect on the cities of Baker, Zachary, or Central because they have their own city councils that would make and enforce laws like this. But everything outside of those three municipalities would be affected by this ordinance. So I would imagine, by extension, that lounge in the airport would be affected by it as well. But I'll speak with the parish attorney's office and determine that.
And I've seen it. I think it's just a room. They don't serve alcoholic beverages. It's just a room. You close the door and go in there and smoke.
Well, if that's the case, we're regulating bars and casinos.
So this would not be affected.
It doesn't seem from what you just said,
it's just a room. It's upstairs by Terminal B.
And I would imagine the day and age of TSA complaints and things of that nature and worrying about the security of our airport, you're not going to have people who are able to, once checked in, step outside to have a cigarette if their plane is delayed 2 or 3 hours.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number for Matt Watson. He's Councilman District 11, and tonight there'll be a vote on the smoking ban. But there is also a lot of gnashing of teeth right now about the Brave funding and the Brave program. You've been following that. What do you think?
Obviously, Arthur Reed's comments at a council meeting before certainly set off a firestorm as far as...
Well, you were there.
Yeah, I've been there when Arthur has made some interesting hand gestures.
Silky Slim, yeah.
Exactly. He's made some interesting hand gestures in my direction. I don't think they're necessarily aimed at me, but he's a fiery individual. When he gets there, I think he's made what I think are very unfortunate, misguided comments about, you know, when he said that the person that came from St. Louis brought justice with him. I don't think that he even believes that statement in the way that it was interpreted by everybody else. And I think it's the wrong message to send. It's certainly a bad message to send to kids, especially from somebody who was entrusted to manage mm-hmm. people's interaction with police and try to reduce violence or, quote-unquote, stop the killing, to have a message come out of that speaker's mouth that said that. Now, having that aside, I've got what I would have done with the Brave dollars that we've got remaining I've already spoken with Jim Lawrence about another program. Many, many, many moons ago, we had, I believe it was Woody Dumas, had Operation Takedown, which was a program to remove blighted and abandoned properties. Now, there is a multitude of studies that prove that blighted and abandoned properties have a positive correlation with violent crime. Many municipalities around America, not just in Louisiana, have used federal anti-crime dollars to eliminate mm-hmm. blighted and condemned properties because they are a place for crime to happen, they're a place for criminals to flee to, and they set the notion that this is an area of town where you can come and commit a crime because there's apathy there, that the powers that be don't care if something happens in this neighborhood. And I think that's unfortunate, and it's terrible for those people who have to live next to those properties. Now, I put together a map with our IS department, which is what we call the IT department with the city, and I put a heat map mm-hmm. together of violent crime density in 70802 and 70805, which are the specific zip codes that Brave dollars need to be spent in. So I have a map that shows high-density pockets of violent crime and overlaid properties that have been condemned, gotten due process, and been voted by the council to be condemned, but yet haven't been demolished and removed yet. If we've got until, I think it's September 18th, to spend $1.7 million and create permanent change, I think using that money, as much of it as possible, to contract people out and improve that community.
Get rid of the blighted properties.
Yeah, remove these blighted properties that can be contributed as a cause of violent crime. I think you've got justification to do it. I think also you've got the added benefit of it helping North Baton Rouge economically and help attract people that already have a substantial tax abatement program to try to get folks to move businesses up in North Baton Rouge. I think it would be very advantageous. And I've spoken with Chief Administrative Officer.
Are you going to bring that before the council tonight?
At this point, bringing it before the council, I may speak to it. But I'm waiting on a phone call back from Dr. Jim Lawrence, who said that he's reached out to the Department of Justice to see if we could utilize those federal dollars, those grant dollars, to do a project such as this.
And you say, and they have to be spent by September 18th.
From what I understand, when they talk about the extensions not being granted, mm-hmm. my understanding of that extension is we don't have an extension to allocate those funds in one way or another past September 18th.
Matt Watson is with us for a little while longer, and then it's Lady Hubbard, but your number is still time. There is still time to get in with Matt if you'd like. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Outside the area, 877-217-5757, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And this is going to be an interesting meeting starting at 4 o'clock. I suspect mm-hmm. you're going to have a lively crowd there.
Sure, I imagine. As with a lot of these, lot of matching T-shirts.
A listener asks, if Silky Slim shows up, will he be welcome?
I'm not in charge of whether someone's welcome or not. Everyone in the public is welcome to come up and speak on the topics that are on the agenda. That's why they're called a public hearing.
And the report from Mayor Broome says Brave served only 63 youths between 2012 and 2016, but a whole lot of money was allocated for that program, federal money. The social media war has really gotten intense over this, Matt Watson.
It has. In fact, you've got a variety of people with a variety of very strong viewpoints who choose to tag folks in their line when they start their comment. And then, trust me, there's probably 100 plus people every day that are copying a story that somebody did, some salacious story or some other argument that they're trying to make, and they're tagging me and the other folks that maybe knew or don't understand all the intricacies of Facebook that actually think I'm in the room or I've committed to being with the statement that's being made, when all they're trying to do is attract me into that space they're creating for that conversation.
They tagged you on whatever point of view they have.
Exactly. If somebody said something angry about the young man that you were talking about who's got a Brave contract, they've made some comment about him or what he's doing, and they tag me. And to tell you the truth, I haven't dug into that contract in particular. I've never met the person. The only person that I know of that's made the news about the Brave contracts so far is just because he's come to me while I'm doing the what I hope is the good work of the city is again Arthur Reed coming in to speak that way at the council meetings.
Well, many people who have taken aim at this young poet, including Senator John Kennedy, haven't said anything, to my knowledge, about the more than $200,000 that was allocated to the Healing Place Church. So there is a legislative audit going on, and hopefully they'll look into every facet of this, not just
certainly
Donnie Rose.
Certainly. Oh, I would agree completely.
All right. And another listener notes this front page story today that is another troubling aspect of our community as far as the violence. A Tennessee truck driver repairing a tire on his 18-wheeler yesterday while waiting to offload a delivery at a Florida Boulevard warehouse was robbed and fatally shot. 49-year-old Keith Odom of Jonesboro, Tennessee, was shot at 8 o'clock yesterday morning in the Longbow Shopping Center, 12,300 block of Florida Boulevard. And what a horrible thing to happen in any community, but in our community. And this guy apparently was literally changing a flat tire and gave his life as a result of it.
Understood. I think that is absolutely horrible. And I think every single violent crime, and especially those losses of life of anyone in our community or anyone anywhere, is just a horrible thing to happen.
Well, what are we going to do about the crime in our community? We've got a lot of things happening right now that are not so pleasant as far as the uptick in murders. Hiller Moore, our DA, says they're up 70% this year in East Baton Rouge Parish.
Have you got a time period? From what time period to present?
As far as this year?
So 2017.
It's up 70% from a year ago.
I think that's terribly unfortunate. We've got a great man in Johnny Dunham taking over for Chief Dabity as temporary chief of police. I know Carl did a fantastic job in reducing crime when he was here by double-digit numbers, and we had, I believe, a decades low homicide rate close to his departure. I think I would like to see more police officers on the street. Certainly there's folks that are advocating for a higher trained, perhaps, police officer. They've asked for more hours of training. I believe that we already are in compliance with a lot of the demands. I think it was 400 hours of training was one of the things that was put out there. I think we already have that. I think if folks think that there's police officers out there that we shouldn't necessarily have behind a badge, you know, I hear that from time and time again. You're well aware of these recent Metro Council meetings where folks come up and talk about members of the police force that they don't think should be members of the police force. Well, I would say to those people, if you increase the pay and increase the working conditions of those people, you'd attract more people to the job, and you could be a little more picky about those people you select to do the work.
Another listener, Henry, writes about this $10,000 purchase of the 22,000-square-foot tract at the corner of Jefferson and Bluebonnet. This was approved by the council before you were a mm-hmm. member, but it was your predecessor who steered the way, Ryan Heck, for this guy, Radu Cosman, to purchase this. Was there anything unusual about that?
The only thing unusual is that historically this municipality has sold properties without doing an appraisal on anything that they've sold, and certainly not even using the dollar amount that the city parish paid themselves to acquire the right-of-way as a reserve in an auction situation. I mean, at the time that this property was purchased, that lots 9 and 10 in Innisfail Estates, to build Bluebonnet Boulevard, the municipality paid a scant more than $2 a square foot for that. And if you adjust that for inflation, that's $3 a square foot. I mean, you could easily take $3 a square foot, multiply it how many square foot was actually sold at the auction, and you'd come up with about, I think it's $190,000+. Again, that would be something that we would use moving forward as a guideline for how we handle sales. Certainly, we never put signage out on properties that are up for public auction. But this particular parcel of property, and I've put all this together forensically after the fact, because this was all done while I no longer worked for Councilman Heck running for election, and was completed, I believe, the 16th of December before I was sworn in. But this process was guided by first DPW and then guided by the parish attorney's office. And underneath the advice of the parish attorney's office, this moved through all of the steps. So there were 7 different instances of public notification. And unanimous consent of the council and the 2 times it was before the council. And if there was something that the council was doing that they shouldn't do, it'd be on the parish attorney's resume to come in and guide them to avoid doing something that they may regret later on.
Is there anything that can be done retroactively to rescind the sale?
People are throwing around lesion beyond moiety, which basically is a law that was set up to protect I believe families or individual property owners from being taken advantage of by someone who was going to do maybe an oil and gas lease or something like that, where they downplayed the value that they knew that property would have in order to make a purchase to increase their cash winnings, I guess, to put it in easy terms. I'm not so sure if that's necessarily something that would work in this case. That's going to be, again, something that's going to be up to any attorneys that want to get involved. But I don't know any other private individual who's ever purchased a parcel of property that had to go through 7 public notices, work from a seller who guided the entire selling or buying procedure every step of the way, and then had 2 votes of a legislative branch to make sure that this was completed.
Well, so you're basically saying, I think, Matt, that on this one, it's over and done with.
And I think it very well may be. We'll see what the legislative auditor wants to do. If the attorneys want to make some kind of motion to try to rescind this sale, I'm interested in watching what happens with this. But I would think this is something that the process has certainly failed us, and it's something that we need to change the process going forward.
Well, it's a case in which there's a lot of this kind of property out there, isn't there? And it's potentially a moneymaker for the city, but obviously you want to get a fair dollar for
certainly,
the property.
Certainly. There's a planning and zoning Metro Council meeting every month, and on those there's usually 1 or 2 areas where right-of-way is revoked and given to adjacent property owners, where there's no auction, there's no sale, there's no appraisal. It's just given to the adjacent property owners because it's no longer needed by the municipality. Are we going to go back and demand payment for all of those that have happened in the past when we've moved streets, for example, and given much larger sizable parcels of property than the one that was at the corner of Bluebonnet and Jefferson to someone? Are we going to go and claw those back? I realize it's a 12-month limit in going back, but I would fight very hard for signage on the property, understanding at least what the municipality paid for it, adjusted for inflation being a reserve if we're going to use an auction, or if we're going to use an appraisal. I think we'd probably have a chance to get more money if we have an auction for the municipality, but if we want to do an appraisal or an adjustment for inflation of what we paid for it initially for a reserve, that protects the municipality for not losing money.
Well, my guess is that now there will be more vigilance if something like this should come before the council again.
Certainly. And I've spoken with Councilman Amoroso, and he's already spoken with our parish attorney, and I reiterate this as well, that there needs to be, if we're going to put signage out in front of my house or your house, if we were going to do a board of adjustment to reduce a setback so we could put a garage in our backyard, if we can put a sign in front of that property, we can certainly put a sign in front of a parcel of property that the municipality is going to put up for public auction.
All right, so is there going to be any kind of discussion about this tonight at the council meeting?
That I don't know. I don't know. But, there very well could be, but I don't know.
But I would think that all the council members want to be in accord on this, and that a policy, as you say, should be in place. So
certainly.
So how do you get that done without bringing it before the council?
I think the change in the signage, especially, and setting up an appraisal, or again, adjustment for inflation, the amount of money originally paid by the city parish to get that right of way, that's something that would come from the parish attorney's office, and I speak with them and find out if they're preparing something or if it's something that's administratively changed and becomes law without necessarily having to come, because it's a procedural rather than something that's something that has to go before the Metro Council.
Another listener asked about the management of the council meetings by your colleague, Councilman Wilson. He has been under attack. Is the criticism warranted, or is he doing a good job?
He's got his own style of doing it, and before there was even a selection of who would be mayor pro tem, knowing that mayor pro tem's primary job is running the meeting, I spoke with someone, and this is before Scott had ever decided to put his name in to even be considered for this. There was a variety of people that were being bandied about to being the mayor pro tem. And I said to this person, I said, you want to find a guy who's a no-nonsense guy that will have this meeting run straightforward and get to the end as quickly as possible and get the business completed, it would be Scott Wilson. Now, obviously, he's had a lot to contend with as far as those folks that come in. And if you've had Gary Chambers put out a Facebook post saying that he wanted to come in and have people speak and shut the meeting down. I'm not going to go and say that I try to undermine Scott's authority in that case, but there's a lot of cases where, you know, if somebody just wanted to say what they wanted to say and you've got five or six people in the room and they got three minutes each to speak, you know, in some cases, maybe he thinks that he'd let them speak. Maybe he just wants to cut them off and make sure they stay on topic, because you certainly don't want to set a precedent that anyone and everyone, regardless of topic or regardless of their passion, comes in and talks about something that they just want to come talk about when really we've got the business of the city to talk about.
Well, it's a tough job at times.
Oh,
and
certainly.
And another listener notes that there's certainly been some discord among the council
itself.
At one point had several members walk out.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate, and I don't understand the logic behind doing that. That seemed to be what I understand from that is at the time we were going to be voting on something to do with the Council on Aging and the Cooperative Endeavor Agreement and putting the tax, announcing the tax was going to be on the ballot. We wanted to defer that 30 days so that we could receive the state legislative audit on the Council on Aging, which was going to come in within that 30-day period. When the Democratic members of the council got up and walked out, we hadn't announced when we were going to do that announcement of when the tax would be out there. And by walking out, instead of a 30-day deferral, they provided a 60-day deferral just per law. And not to mention that something else that's near and dear to their districts, the North Baton Rouge Economic District, needed to have their tax announced as well. And by deferring that, they lost a full quarter of sales tax revenue for that end.
Well, Matt, we thank you. And it should be a lively meeting tonight, and I'm sure we'll have occasion to talk again. But thanks for your time this
morning.
Jim,
thank you for having me.
Take care. Good luck to you.
Thank you.